This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor. The images from just outside a high school in South Florida yesterday are the merest glimpse of the terror that students must have felt. Children and staff racing away from the building, collapsing into the arms of loved ones, overcome by tears. A gunman opened fire at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, a suburb northwest of Miami, and killed 17 people. It is an increasingly familiar nightmare for students in the United States. Yesterday's school shooting is the deadliest since 20 children were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut back in 2012. Like at Sandy Hook and the hundreds of other school shooting incidents that took place since, healing will not come easily. Here's Florida Governor Rick Scott speaking yesterday.
Everybody in the hospital, I pray for their full recovery. All the individuals that unfortunately had to go through this experience, I know that there's going to be grief counselors, and I'm sure it's going to be very, very difficult as they think through what happened and replay in their mind what happened. I just can't imagine going through that.
That's Florida Governor Rick Scott responding to the attack. Another briefing is taking place as we speak, which we are monitoring. We are also monitoring remarks from President Trump, and we will bring you pieces of that momentarily as events warrant. He has already ordered all flags on federal buildings lowered to half staff. But we're keeping an eye on the president's remarks, and if anything notable is said, we will share that with you. But back to the campus, what will Stoneman Douglas High School and Parkland, Florida, and our nation need to do to get through another deadly tragedy at another school campus? Joining us now from Nashville is Jonathan Metzl, a professor of sociology and psychiatry at Vanderbilt University. He's also the director of the university's Center for Medicine, Health, and Society. Professor Metzl, welcome to 1A.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Let's focus on the people who were inside the school during the shooting, who saw and heard and felt something awful, something that hopefully no one has to go through. What should they be doing today to deal with what just happened?
Well, I would say that there's certainly no uniform answer for that. It's unimaginable the kind of fear of death, fear of trauma, proximity to just unimaginable levels of carnage that they were close to. And I think what's interesting about this particular shooting, on one hand, you know, as you mentioned, we've had so many of these shootings, but in this shooting, there was also video and audio recording from within. And so the trauma of what it felt like to be inside that school is something that's shared across schools across the country and really across the world today. And so in that regard, there's no one uniform way that people are going to recover from this kind of fear. And the other issue is so many people lost friends, teachers, colleagues, factors like that. And so it really is, as we know, unfortunately, from our experiences after Sandy Hook and other school shootings, just a very long, drawn-out process of mourning and coming to terms not just with the loss, but also with the profound helplessness that emerges at a time like this.
What about social media? We got a number of images and videos from students who posted on apps like Snapchat as this was happening, which gave us a glimpse inside. But I can't help but imagine how that, and I don't know if there's research on this, but how that maybe sears the memory of what happened by defining it very clearly, by putting it in vivid, bold detail. That can't be easy on a mental health basis.
Right. Well, I mean, there are multiple levels of social media engagement in relation to school shootings like this, and particularly this one. I think on one hand, of course, there's a real-time feel because people were communicating both from within the school with loved ones outside and with the community. So there was a sense of watching this horror happen in real time that was really being conveyed by Twitter and other factors like that. And so in that regard, social media became a conduit for people who were inside the school. And in that sense, I think that, you know, it almost made it almost more tragic because the whole nation was living almost inside that school at that moment. And at the same time, there's also a political debate that happens in social media almost immediately after something like this happens about the language that we use to describe what happened, to process it. And unfortunately, that's very political as well. People take to Twitter to either say, this is a larger problem of guns in society. How could a 16 or 18 or however, you know, how could kids have semi-automatic weapons and access to them? And on the flip side, people like President Trump calling this a mentally disturbed individual trying to locate the problem not so much in society as within an individually disturbed brain. And so there's a politics of the language of social media that I think we have to be very aware of.
And as I mentioned, President Trump, we are expecting him to speak momentarily. We'll monitor that as we continue our conversation with Vanderbilt Professor Jonathan Metzl. We'd love to hear from you, too. We're just going to discuss this for this first segment of the program. We'll keep an eye on this, bring you the latest. You'll hear more on your NPR member station also. But what questions do you have about how a community moves on after something like this or tries to move on? Heaven forbid you've been through something like this, too. What got you through it? What helped or hurt in the healing process? Email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page. Tweet us at 1A. I wonder, Professor Metzl, about the relationships between students and instructors. Broward Sheriff Scott Israel is speaking right now about Aaron Feiss, who was a coach at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School and apparently sacrificed himself to save some of the students. Sheriff Israel is referring to him as, quote, one of the greatest people I knew, a phenomenal man. He did it to protect others. You can guarantee that, unquote, from Sheriff Scott Israel in Broward County. What about that, the bond between teachers and students after a tragedy, especially if teachers lose their lives?
Well, certainly there are unbelievable and unimaginable acts of bravery that happen at times like this, some of which we hear about, like this particular case, somebody who literally put their life on the line to shield students, and others that we'll never hear about in a particular way because it's when somebody's going around a school shooting with a semi-automatic weapon, the level of carnage often takes many victims, as we've seen here. And so in that regard, certainly that bravery, and you can think of a teacher as someone who's kind of trying to protect their students, protect their classroom, and this comes out in moments of great bravery. And there are other stories that we're hearing from the Florida high school shooting of teachers who are, you know, guarding their students in closets or locking them. But again, I think it's important to also note that these kind of drills, this kind of routine of these kind of mass shootings that have become increasingly frequent are things that, unfortunately, there's a kind of cultural trauma that we have as well as these become more prevalent. And even as we think about these issues of kind of individual bravery, we also have to keep asking the question, what can we do to prevent this happening again and with such regularity?
Just want to acknowledge one of our listeners who tweeted, just found out the 14-year-old niece of a good friend was one of those killed. Enough thoughts and prayers. I am so sorry for your loss and for their loss as well. I wonder, Professor Metzl, how well schools are equipped to deal with these kinds of traumas. I mean, we've heard that grief counselors are in the area. I think they've set up 3 or 4 grief counseling centers, actually. But are schools equipped to deal with this? Do they still need support from the outside? How ready are campuses for this kind of tragedy?
Well, this question of thoughts and prayers has become an increasing kind of conversation among the gun violence prevention community because on one hand, at moments like this, there are moments where we should all come together. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. This is not a pro or anti-gun issue. Innocent children and teachers and communities with increasing frequency are losing their lives. And even if they're not, I mean, unfortunately, we all know a community now that's been affected by this kind of gun violence. And so in that sense, I think the whole nation, of course, sends thoughts and prayers. And at the same time, I think that the critique of that kind of rhetoric, and I think it seems like that was what the caller was referring to, is that unfortunately, thoughts and prayers are also being used as a code word to say, therefore, because this was one individual act, there's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And I cannot tell you how much I disagree with that part of the problem here is about schools. But look at this particular school. This school had armed guards. It had done clearly safety training about what to do in evidence of mass shooting. Those things pale in comparison to the bigger story, which is that somebody was walking around the school with a semi-automatic weapon firing. And so the question is not just about school preparedness. It's also what can we do to limit the easy access to semi-automatic weapons in times like this.
I know our time is short, but one listener wrote in our email inbox, "Hey, Joshua, glad to hear your reluctance to refer to this community as not the type of community where a shooting would happen. If we want to be honest with ourselves, every community where there are guns is automatically the type of community where gun violence would happen. Rather than being surprised, we should expect it. If we don't like it, we should get rid of the guns." I know our time with you, Professor, is very short. School is canceled at Stoneman today, understandably. Talk about the role, though, that the school needs to play, in your view, in helping the recovery process. Is there a point at which a school like Stoneman, who goes through this, needs to reopen?
Certainly, we've seen with other schools that there is a process of coming together where people tend to isolate themselves and coming together as a community. There's an act of bravery of carrying on as a matter of fact after these kind of shootings. And so in that regard, that's very important. But again, I'll just go back to part of the helplessness of what we experience as a school and as a nation is the sense that, as the caller mentions, this can happen anywhere at any time. And part of the issue is, what do we do to protect it? And unfortunately, that's not just a question of school preparedness. Part of the helplessness is having a really honest conversation about limiting access to semi-automatic weapons and other factors that, on one hand, respect people's Second Amendment rights, but also make our communities and our schools safer.
Should note that Fox News is among the outlets monitoring the briefing taking place now, and Florida Governor Rick Scott is quoted as saying, if someone is mentally ill, they should not have access to a gun. Vanderbilt University sociology and psychiatry professor Jonathan Metzl, also the director of Vanderbilt Center for Medicine, Health, and Society. Professor, we appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks so much.
We are monitoring President Trump for his remarks regarding the shooting in Florida. We'll bring that to you as soon as events warrant. Also, keep an ear out on your NPR member station and online at npr.org. But just ahead here, the path to community healing from a very different kind of trauma is underway in Baltimore, where two cops were convicted for egregious abuses of power. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.